Forget everything you had planned for this weekend because you are sitting on your couch and winning from the comfort of your own home. I'm here with SpinQuest, where you can play hundreds of slot games, all of the table games you love, and you could even win real cash prizes. New users, $30 coin packs are on sale for $10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. I welcome my colleague Jonathan Schanzer, Executive Director of the Foundation for Defense of Democracies. Watching the news following the Sharm el-Sheikh agreement between Masters of the Earth that the Gaza war is winding down? Question mark. Jonathan, a very good evening to you. Momentarily, we have news from Jerusalem that is dire. Mr. Netanyahu is guaranteeing and confirming that he's ordering airstrikes in Gaza against, we can presume, Hamas shooters who've opened fire on Israeli troops. This could be expected. All wars end raggedly. However, airstrikes again suggest that Hamas has other plans besides surrendering all the hostages and disarming. Good evening to you, Jonathan.
Good evening, John. Yeah, we are hearing about these strikes that Netanyahu has ordered. They are in response to a Hamas attack that reportedly took place in the southern town of Rafah. This is a strike that Hamas carried out, killing at least one Israeli soldier, wounding several others. So Israel's response is not a surprise. It is well within the bounds of the structure created in Donald Trump's 20-point plan. I think that Netanyahu is making a great deal more of this than perhaps he might have normally. And I think there is a reason for that. In recent days, there have been reports swirling in Israel that the Trump administration has contained, that he is unable to engage in action against Hamas or other actors without the say-so of the Trump administration. So the political optics of that have Netanyahu looking to make more of this response than perhaps it is. So he's calling them powerful and he's calling them immediate. At the end of the day, this seems very much in line with what he has done before. My sense, at least for the moment, John, is that the ceasefire continues to hold. It's been tenuous from the start. The other thing that I would just note, though, is that there is anger building in Israel right now. There was a video circulating early Tuesday morning in Israeli media that that depicted Hamas operatives digging in a spot in it was unclear exactly where in Gaza, unearthing the remains of an Israeli hostage. It turns out that was all for show. The Israelis were able to somehow detect that this was not one of the 13 bodies slated to be sent home to Israel for burial. The people of Israel are growing tired of Hamas. They think that they're playing for time, that they're playing the United States, that they are not moving ahead with the agreement, as Donald Trump stipulated. So I think for that reason as well, Benjamin Netanyahu may be looking to extract a bit more from Hamas, get his pound of flesh, if you will, because he is unhappy with the way that things have been going.
Some weeks ago, but Jonathan, you were very keen on emphasizing that Hamas's plan is to slow roll the release of the hostages, even to the point of not actually completing them. That looks to be the pattern that we've seen these last weeks. For example, at one point, Israel said, we know where 9 of the 13 are, and then suddenly there was another one announced. What is the count right now, confirmed count of returned and not yet returned?
As I understand it right now, 15 returned, 13 not returned, 9 hostages are said to be at least locatable. In other words, the Israelis know where they are, or they know that they can be retrieved. So that leaves 4 that are left up in the air. The frustration, though, John, is that, there are some bodies that have been held in Gaza for longer than the war. And the families are keenly aware of the fact that Hamas has long known where their bodies have been buried, where they've been stored. And so they're frustrated that these bodies have not yet been returned, knowing that Hamas has full control and access to where they are.
Is the expectation at the IDF that the bodies will not all be returned, that we're dealing with a gray zone that has not been anticipated?
I can't speak to the IDF specifically. I can speak to some of the opinions that I've heard from former senior officials, as well as some that are still in the Israeli government. They believe that Israel's been lucky. And by lucky, I mean that Donald Trump has leaned on Hamas and leaned on Hamas's patrons, and that Israel got out the vast majority of the bodies and the living hostages that they were able to retrieve. That was a remarkable thing in and of itself. The fact that we're down now to 13 bodies is something that I think nobody expected when this war erupted on October 7th, 2023. I think there was an expectation that they were never coming back. The fact that we've gotten this to this number, that they've been winnowed down, that the things have dwindled to this point, is remarkable. But again, I think we need to understand, as we've discussed before on your program, John, Hamas knows that these bodies are their leverage, that if they want to remain intact in power, if they want to hold on to whatever they've got in the Gaza Strip, giving away more bodies will make them weaker. And that is the paradox that we're in right now. Hamas knows it. Israel knows it. All of Hamas's patrons know it. The United States understands this. That doesn't mean that the pressure will cease. I think we will continue to see the pressure mount against Hamas, but there is going to be a limit to what they are willing to cede.
Hamas, the headline in the Times of Israel repeats information you've conveyed before, Jonathan. Israel assesses Hamas still has 20,000 fighters, many untrained, hundreds of rockets. The question here is, what is the untrained part? I remember being told teenagers. Is there any understanding of what the leadership looks like? Is it middle-level, overweight men? Is it people who somehow were not in Gaza during the worst of the fighting? Usually what you find is that the best and most sophisticated leadership is dead because it goes up against the Israelis.
That's right. And Hamas has lost almost all of its top leadership. There is a man named Izzedine al-Haddad, who is a relative unknown to most Israeli Hamas watchers, certainly unknown to me. And I've been studying this group for several decades now. I'd never heard of this man. And he's now the figurehead that is in charge of the entire Gaza war for Hamas, such as it is. The top leaders surrounding him as lieutenants are people also that nobody has ever heard of before. These are people now not in their 40s, but very likely now in their 20s. In other words, these were people that were not particularly well-seasoned before the war began, but they are now in a position of leadership by the process of elimination, quite literally. The younger ranks now of Hamas are much younger than they used to be. They are in their teens, most of whom have never fought before. They have been trained now on AK-47s and maybe some IEDs, but these are not well-trained fighters. I think the most important thing to understand, John, is, yes, there are probably a couple hundred rockets right now in Hamas's possession, maybe even 1,000 or 2. That is a stark difference from the 15 or 20,000 rockets that Hamas had at the beginning of this war. They don't have the ability to break through the fence. They don't have the ability to send those hang gliders into Israel the way that they did. Their navy is destroyed. In other words, all of the capabilities that they were building up for the 10/7 attacks are no longer. This is an urban asymmetric war that is being waged by Hamas in an area that is now 47% of the Gaza Strip, maybe even smaller. What we're calling is this area with inside the yellow line. This is the new border that Israel has created. It's an additional buffer zone inside the borders of Gaza. The area where Hamas is operating is shrinking. And my suspicion is it's going to shrink further as the Israelis find additional opportunities to strike at Hamas. I think when they do, you may see the forces close in tighter and tighter.
Your colleague, your excellent colleague, Ahmad Sharari, has published on FDD's site an analysis of what is inside the Gaza part that is said to be dominated by Hamas. And what we have is a revival of the clan system. With Hamas weakened, the clan system, having not changed over the years, is stronger, led by clans that are gangsters, not jihadis in any fashion I could identify, is also said to be anti-Hamas militia, who are not ready to give the strip back to Hamas because of the catastrophe they've caused. Is that a substantial group? Last week you identified the possibility that what is left of Gaza to Hamas can turn into Bantustan, and there'll be neighborhoods and buildings they cannot go because the clans dominate them. Is that a realistic outcome to this?
It is a potential outcome. I mean, there are a number of different tribes that are active there. You've probably heard about this one clan called the Dagmush clan.
Yes.
You may have heard about the Abu Shabab militia. There are a handful of others that have a certain amount of power, some that have longstanding power and influence and financial influence inside the Gaza Strip. They may be able to cordon off areas that are safe from Hamas influence and where they can extend their own power. That's part of what may be happening. Then there are these gangs that also are active inside the Gaza Strip. In particular, we've heard about the Abu Shabab militia that's fighting not necessarily because they're so anti-Hamas, but because they just disagree with the way that Hamas has run the Gaza Strip. Not their ideology per se, but these are the sorts of things that lead to question marks about the future of the territory on the Hamas side of the yellow line, but also what might happen after the guns fall silent, whatever that is, however that looks. There will be different clans and tribes and families that try to exert influence from one neighborhood to the next. We saw this during the Second Intifada between 2000 and 2005. We saw it during the First Intifada from 1988 till roughly 1991. These were the sorts of things that occurred all the time. When law and order break down, John, people look for new structures. And sometimes those structures are just simply the oldest ones that people can remember that command a modicum, if you will, of respect.
One more detail about Hamas. Al Jazeera is still playing the double game. Wasn't that part of the Sharm el-Sheikh agreement that Doha would cut it out, and they have not?
Look, I think we all expected the Qataris to get right back into the shenanigans that we've always seen them engage in, which is whipping up anti-Israel sentiment, pro-Hamas sentiment across the Arab world with this very popular TV platform. I never expected them to stop. I did expect them to slow it down a bit, but this is going to be like turning on and off a faucet. And I think that's essentially what we should expect from this Qatari television platform. If you ask me, John, it should be shut down.
Yeah.
The United States should be demanding it. But since we're not doing that, we will slap their wrist. They will turn down the volume, so to speak, and then they'll turn it back up when we look the other way.
Does that mean Al-Thani thinks that he has to keep none of the agreements that he made?
I think that Al-Thani would like to renege on all of the agreements that he made and still walk away with U.S. assurances for his security. Donald Trump is the only man who can disabuse him of that notion. And I'm waiting for Donald Trump to stop inviting him onto Air Force One, stop calling him a wonderful leader in the Middle East, and to begin to hold him to account for the multiple crimes that he has committed along with those that are part of his regime.
Jonathan Schanzer, Executive Director, Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. Iran. We're headed to Iran. There's trouble.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
I'm here with SpinQuest, where you can play and win from the comfort of your own home with hundreds of slot games and all of the table games you love with real cash prizes. Right now, $30 coin packs are on sale for $10 for new users. It's all at SpinQuest.com. That's SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
It's Cybersecurity Awareness Month. LifeLock is here with tips to help protect your identity. Use strong passwords, set up multi-factor authentication, report scams, and update your software. And for comprehensive identity protection, LifeLock is your best choice. LifeLock alerts you to suspicious uses of your personal information and fixes identity theft, guaranteed, or your money back. Start your protection today with a 30-day free trial at LifeLock.com. Use promo code NEWS. Terms apply.
COTA salutes those who served. Veterans ride free Tuesday, November 11th. And every other day of the year, our veterans and active duty military personnel get a 50% discount on all fares. It's all part of COTA's ongoing commitment to show appreciation for your selfless service. To ride at no cost on fixed routes, tell your bus operator that you're a veteran or use code VET2025 in the app to use COTA Plus. Veterans ride free on Tuesday, November 11th for Veterans Day. Veterans get a 50% discount every day on COTA. Plan your ride and learn more at COTA.com/trip planner.